right now, we have a wonderful person here that I'm really excited to have on. His name is Van Hatchell, and he's going to be speaking about social entrepreneurism in the community. Now, you remember earlier, if you were here listening to my keynote, I talked about how today's solutions for employment and finding ways to have our loved ones have fulfilling lives was going to be about not just finding things that are already out there, but helping with other people to create solutions and opportunities that can be really exciting for our loved ones on the spectrum. Van Hatchell is the Managing Director of Extraordinary Ventures, which is a nonprofit in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. And the mission of Extraordinary Ventures is has the mission of creating small businesses for the sake of employing adults with developmental disabilities. In his time there, he has grown three businesses to be sustainable employers, created the team of social entrepreneurs who manage the businesses, and worked closely with Autism Speaks to identify the 14 promising practices of small business employment across the country. And so his topic about social entrepreneurism in the community is how a group of parents were able to tap social entrepreneurs to create an organization to employ 40 individuals with developmental disabilities. Welcome, Van.
Thank you, Chantal. I'm really, I really appreciate Modifying Autism asking us to be a part of the conference. I'm really hoping to share our story with the listeners, and that it will generate some really good questions and might inspire some of our listeners to potentially think about starting businesses to employ their loved ones. Before I get started with my slide presentation, I do want the listeners to watch our video, the About Us video that is on our website. I believe that it's below the slides, so I want to time it with my computer too, so I'm going to hit play now, and then I'll start in my slides after the video.
Right. For those who are watching online, the slide, the video is actually 4 minutes and 45 seconds. I'm going to watch it too.
Great. So I think now everyone should be finished with the video. It's been about 5 minutes. So now, hopefully that gave you a pretty good idea of the general direction of our organization. And now I want to take a bit of a deeper dive with these slides just so you guys can get a better understanding of who we are. And then hopefully if you're hearing our story, it'll generate some pretty good Q&A after the slides. So first, the obviously, the title of the presentation is Creating Jobs in the Community, A Story of Social Entrepreneurism in the Community. So if you take anything away from these slides, it's that we are a real business. We employ 40 individuals on the spectrum, and that we're a replicable model. Those are the takeaways of who we are. So what's unique about our organization? The first is that we're a portfolio of small businesses. We don't rely just on any one business to create our employment. We serve the full spectrum of disabilities, and we're managed by a team of young social entrepreneurs, and that our businesses are created around the strengths and skills and interests of the individuals that we employ. So let's take a step back. You know, obviously, you everyone out on this line is an expert in this. When an individual that has autism phases out of the school system, whatever age that might be depending on your state, here it's 22 in North Carolina, and it really services just disappear. The schools do a really good job of, in our area especially, of filling a person's day with meaning, structure, and growth. But once they phase out of the school system, the services really disappear. And when we looked across the country at the situation that different states get when they phase out of the school system, it's much the same. So speaking from our viewpoint of the next 10 years, it's estimated now that 500,000 individuals with autism spectrum disorder alone will phase out of the school system. That's some staggering numbers. Here we call it the crisis, because the crisis isn't that it's going to happen. The crisis is how are we going to meet the need? Because the need needs to be met. So what do families do when they phase out of the school system? Speaking from the families that are employed at Extraordinary Ventures now, many of them talk about the days they instantly started scrapping for the limited services that were there in our community. And they faced the job market with few opportunities and a lot of misconceptions that prevented them from finding any type of paid employment. And to be honest, many of them gave up.
Van?
Yeah?
Are you able to see the slides moving? Because somebody just wrote in to say that they don't see the slides advancing. Is it advancing?
Oh. They were for me. I can re-click on the link and see what happens.
Maybe I should just tell people to refresh their screen.
Let's see. Does that picture?
Here, now it is. I would suggest that individuals who say that the slides are not advancing to refresh their screen, because perhaps with watching the video, you weren't able to see the screen advancing or the slides advancing. Sorry about that. So everyone just refresh your screens because the slides are moving. I can see them.
Okay, great. Well, jumping back in, we really felt like out of that need in the community that a portfolio approach would be a really neat solution for employing this population in our community. I mentioned we were started by parents, and those parents banded together and looked, and there were organizations that were doing training. There was organizations that were covering transition. And there were organizations that were doing some type of supported employment, job coaching. But really, with all that going on, there wasn't a whole lot of opportunity there. So they set out to create an organization to employ their kids. I mentioned earlier that unique approach, the first piece that's unique is that we have multiple small businesses as a vehicle for our employment. We really feel like that's essential and gives us three forms of diversification. One is that consider the market environment changes and our employment, the business that's one of our employers, begins to decline. We can then shift our resources and our employees into another business, and their hours are more secure. That diversification and option actually gives us the ability to place more individuals. Say, your son or daughter lives in our area and comes to us. We have an opening in one or two of our businesses, and maybe they don't like making candles, but they really enjoy the structured task of folding laundry. Well, then, if we were a typical employer, we would say, sorry, we couldn't employ you if the first business you were approached was either gifts, but because we see the interest and skill, we can then push you into a different business. And then lastly, it gives us options. It gives us options for our employees who, work in a business for a few years and then decide that, their interests have changed or they want to grow in a different area. So we really feel like that balanced approach and that portfolio approach gives us a really a unique strength as an employment model. So, many jobs are overwhelming to the population. That's very typical, and whether it be the soft skills that it takes to navigate an employment setting or it's any type of stimulus in the work environment that could be unnoticed by the other coworkers. Really, there was a lot about the job market that was overwhelming that we wanted to be able to make comfortable for our employees. And so how we did that is with, you know, the other one of those unique features of our model is that we really fit the jobs around the people. But what I mean by this is that we aren't job carving. We aren't taking a business that's existing and finding a place that, you know, someone could come in and work, but it's really not part of the full value proposition of the business. We look at our employees and segment them based on their skills and interests. So, for instance, with our candle business, we started that business because we had a few employees that really liked to cook, or people that said they liked to cook, maybe not so good at it, but wanted to pursue something like that. Well, we created the candle business because it follows a recipe process. It was a business that they would thrive in because they were interested in it. Same with our laundry business. Our laundry business was created because we had one employee who really liked to ride around town and go in and out of buildings and meet people. We had another employee who at home would take clothes off of his shelf that had been neatly folded already just to fold them again. And we actually had a few employees that really liked watching the machines operate. They really enjoyed that process. So out of that, those combination of segmenting those employee skills, we created businesses really that they could excel in, that we could leverage their abilities into something that was going to work locally. So here's a sample of the tasks that we have in two of our businesses. The first is our bus crew. Vacuuming the floors, cleaning our seats, watching windows, and supervisory duties. So the thing you should take away from all of these types of tasks are that they're very simple. You know, it's not rocket science. They can be communicated visually on a task list, and the start and finish can be communicated visually. And it can be replicated in a to-do list really easy. And then lastly, the supervisory duties. We actually have individuals on the spectrum supervising the team that details the interior of the buses on our bus crew. So we actually have worked in the opportunity for promotion and skill advancement, career development into this business. Same thing here with the laundry business. Again, we sort and inventory clothes, we operate machines, we fold and pack, and then pick up and deliver. And like I said earlier, it's not rocket science, and they're all tasks that we can structure very nicely for someone who really needs that picture schedule or a visual schedule with clear starts and stops and clear expectations. And with that approach of creating the businesses around the skills and interests of our employees, we didn't actually start our organization going down that path when we first tried to create employment. We didn't have a lot of growth during that time. But since we changed, our businesses have been able to grow in employment by 50% each year since 2010. That employment is actually the number of employees that we have here and the amount of employment that we offer to our employees. And we really do believe that that's a key way to succeed at creating businesses to employ the population, designing around their skills and interests. But beyond the numbers, the real payoff, honestly, is the satisfaction and growth that our employees experience while they have a job that's a competitive employment. The sense of belonging they have when they're part of something bigger than themselves, and the fact that they're part of a team. You know, whether they can communicate it with to you verbally or not, or with an iPad or some type of intermediary, really, our guys enjoy being a part of something. They also really understand when they're creating value. All of our businesses, the jobs that we have, directly impact the customer, and they understand that our employees totally get when what they're doing provides a value to somebody. And it really gives them a lot of confidence when they know that they are contributing. But then lastly, the paycheck is big for our employees. You know, most of them, this is their first paying job, and that is something, that paycheck, that ability to tell people that they get paid for what they do is something that is really valuable to them. A lot of them use their money to help pay utilities for for their living situation or use their money to, you know, start relationships with individuals in the community. So it's really is an asset to them moving forward and growing. So to sort of speak about what we've learned along the way, because, you know, we certainly don't feel like we're experts and we don't have the only answer. We feel like we have a pretty decent answer for our community. You know, the lessons that we've learned is that you really just have to get started. You know, it took us about a year and a half, 2 years before we decided to actually start a business. In concept form for 2 years, you know, you don't create a whole lot of employment when you're just thinking about what you're going to do. So get started. That's a big hurdle. Two, accepting trial and error is something that is a mantra for our organization because, one, you know, without failure, you're not going to know what's going to work for your customers. Without trial and error and failing and learning, you're not going to know what's going to work for your employees. But on the far side of that, failure comes success. Every win grows on itself and compounds to create a thriving work environment, a sustainable work environment. The third lesson that we've learned is you really have to focus on your local markets and pick the low-hanging fruit. You know, our laundry business works really well because we serve mainly students at our university. We're located in the same town as University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill, and they're our primary customers. You know, you might not have a college town, so, you know, our business, that laundry business might not work for you. But every community has its own opportunities, so just go and try to find that low-hanging fruit that is going to be an interest of the employees. And then lastly, you've got to treat it like it's a real business. And this is something that we really feel separates a sustainable work environment from an environment that is only short-term and could potentially be training. And that's you treat it like a real business when you grow the business based on real profit margin. You have a really good idea of how to communicate tasks to your employees, clock in, clock out. It's done sustainably. You're going to create an environment that could stand the test of time. That's how it becomes a real business when you treat it that way. And then lastly, you know, I just want to review our organization's goals. You know, first and foremost, you know, we just want to provide the most meaningful employment that we can to our community. You know, this will always be our long-term and immediate goal. But second, because we feel like we've sort of cracked the code in our local area on how to do something like this, we really do want to inspire and motivate through sharing our story. And that, lastly, transitions into being a model. You know, we certainly don't feel like we have the only answer, but we do think we have an answer that could work. Our approach could work in many communities across the country to create employment for this population. And so with that, hopefully that gives you a really good idea of what we do, and hopefully could inspire you to potentially think about creating an employment environment for your loved ones in your community. And with that, hopefully let's get into some questions. I think generally we stimulate a lot of Q&A because we are such a unique model and have been through a lot of failure to get to where we are now.
Yes, so there are some questions out here, but I have a bunch of questions first, if that's okay.
Yeah, sure.
Well, the first thing I want to know is how did this company get started? Because my impression was that it wasn't just you know, Voc Rehab or an organization like that. Was it parents that started this, or parents with a bunch of college graduates, or where did the idea of this come from?
Certainly. So our organization really did come out of the community banding together to meet the need. And what I mean by that is really parents had moved to our area for the UNC Teach Center when their children were diagnosed with autism in the early 90s. And so they had banded together and really fought for everything their kids got in the community as they grew each phase. And when they approached adulthood, they noticed that there were not a whole lot of opportunities, and so they wanted to create an organization like this. So what they did is they found a building, they put some money into it, and they hired a team of young entrepreneurs to set the business up, and that's what we talk about in our video and our unique factor. So one of the business ideas, the laundry business, was brought with the organization when it first started. Two of the parents thought that would be really good employers for their individuals, their kids, and it could really scale in the community. But then the rest of the businesses we came up with, the team of entrepreneurs came up with, as we segmented those employees, like I mentioned earlier, figured out what they liked, and then looked at, could we create businesses that were going to be sustainable in our local community? So it was really a bit of a grassroots effort, parents coming together to solve a problem and tapping some young energy to move forward with it.
That's great. And what I loved also, when I looked at your, or you know, when you were showing your slide about lessons learned, it's actually everything about treating it like a business. And that's exactly what I say, what I'm talking about when you're preparing, what I was talking about in my keynote about preparing students for life after school, is what is mm-hmm. it that the wants to do and what are the skills they need, you know, that they can actually function out in the community. And you have to treat it, treat looking for work as a business. What are the employer needs? What are they looking for? And how does that relate to the individuals that we have? And like you really focus on what is it the person likes to do? What can he do? And that whole team approach is really great because not everyone can do every single aspect of a job. And I think that by yeah. working together, it creates the idea that they're all a team. And so if one of them has a success, it's a success for the whole team. And they have friendships that way.
Very true. And I think, too, that oftentimes when it comes to thinking of employment settings for people with autism, it's, okay, what's out there? What could we adapt them to do in the community? And often I think, you know, when the typical guidance counselor asks a kid, well, what do you want to do when you grow up? Okay, you answer and you pursue that path. And that's really what this type of approach was. You know, what would our employees enjoy doing? Maybe if we created businesses that they would like, they would want to be a part of, then things would gel better. And they have. You know, some of our employees have behaviors at home, but we see very few behaviors in our work environment because they really enjoy what they do. Because we've set them up based on the strengths and interests of the segments, you know, onboarding process is really quick, and we honestly don't see a whole lot of employee turnover. So, you know, that approach really, I think, has made things really, really nice and easily manageable for us.
Can you remind me how long this has been, how long you've been running this company or that this company's been in existence?
Yeah, so we were founded in 2007 by those parents. We started in the first 2 years, we really struggled to find our footing, and then we pivoted the organization in 2010, 2011 during that time, and that's when, like I mentioned, we actually took on this approach of creating businesses around individuals, hiring a team of young entrepreneurs to get the thing moving. So it's been a really good ride, and we've seen a lot of growth in the past 2-3 years.
Great. Okay, I'm going to start taking some questions that are coming in now, and I want to remind people they can either ask a question by writing into the little chat box there, or I think if you're on the phone and you're looking online, there's a little place where you can click to raise your hand. But there's a question here from Kathleen Tarani. Hi, Kathleen. It's Chantel in Orlando, Florida. She says, your program sounds wonderful. You mentioned that it is replicable. Do you have any current relationships established that would allow this program model to begin in any other states? If so, which states? And how can individuals and families facilitate implementation of this program in their area? What can they do to help speed things up? Great work. Okay, so one at a time. Do you have current relationships established that would allow this program model to begin in other states?
You know, we're actually trying to develop that right now where we could, you know, turnkey franchise our organization in other areas. You know, we see that being a few-year process to figure out how that's going to be manageable, what's the best practice for us to do that. Obviously, like I said earlier, embracing trial and error in our organization. And then taking a look at what after those, you know, one or two few year getting into the replications happen, then seeing, okay, how can we package this to make it scale? How can we scale it into any community that would want it? So right now, there's not a we have some preliminary relationships going with different places in the country who are thinking about helping us learn how to franchise, but nothing going yet. You could see a lot happening with us, though, in the next few years, actually a few months along this regard. When it comes to deliverables, you know, we're happy to share our story. And really what I mean by a replicable is that, you know, you could take our concept and do this in your community. You know, for instance, you don't have to have the whole organization that you're looking at today to start. You know, for instance, our candle business started, you know, it was started in the kitchen. You know, we started making in batches of 8, and we sold those in front of the local grocery stores. And then after you have that win, and you take it and you try to sell it online, after you figure that out, you take it and you try to sell it to mom-and-pop retailers. And then when you have that win, you then take it to bigger partners who are going to be able to create some volume for the business. But all that doesn't just happen at once. It takes a few years to get going in the process. But we certainly are open to helping.
It's important. I really like the fact that you realize that people liked cooking and they liked recipes, and candles are a recipe process, because one important thing about being able to make candles instead of food is, first of all, candles are non-perishable. And also, yeah, in a lot of space, if you want to make food that you're going to sell somewhere, there's a whole licensing, and you have to do it in an approved kitchen and all this kind of stuff. But when you're working with candles, you don't have that kind of challenge, do you?
No, you don't. And, you know, even with our laundry business, you say that you could see an addressable market for our laundry business. You don't have to go out and buy a laundromat to start our business. Our business, you know, for the first year had only 10 or 12 customers. You know, if we had gone out and we had a facility because of all of our other businesses already going when we started that, the laundry business. But you could feasibly start servicing 10, 12 customers out of a basement somewhere or out of your living room using your own machines, building up the demand for the product. And then once you have, you know, the point where you would need to grow out of your own smaller setting, then go look for a place, a shop that would need to be, you know, a rent and at least be paid. The concept of starting small, though, is something that we've always tried to do first. Anything that has a whole lot of critical mass that has to happen before it can be sustainable, it's really difficult unless you have a lot of cash, a lot of management, a lot of experience. So lower those barriers by thinking, how can I do this that's going to be valuable to the customer and do it the simplest and cheapest way possible?
So when you talked about selling online, you don't necessarily have to set up a whole big website, but you can actually use existing websites that are there to help market for you, correct?
Yeah, exactly. We when we first started on our web, selling on our website, we used a Google checkout feature, which, you know, you created a Google Excel spreadsheet, and then it populates the whole store for you and handled all the process. And they've actually discontinued using that service now, but things like Shopify do it for you very quickly. Etsy, if you've ever heard of that store, it works very quickly.
Yes.
And then if you have a really substantial product, you can even get on things like Amazon.com and have access to their buyers.
Right. I did want to mention, because I do have some calls coming in online here. Here's the instruction. If you're on the phone, you can just hit *2. And I can see on my computer who's has a question. So just sit tight, though, because there are other questions as well. But if you are on the phone and you have a question, you can hit *2 on your phone. All right, so here's a question from Regina Del Oro in Manhattan Beach, California. How did they go about funding EV? Did they tap public resources, or did they raise money to start it? And how viable is it financially? So the first question, how did you go about funding EV?
So when EV started, the parents that started the organization banded together to create the initial seed money. And I know that sounds somewhat daunting, but we try to explain it to people that, you know, in general, a lot of times families look to pay for their kids' college education. And if your kid isn't going to go to college, you know, EV, when we started, the commitment was pitched as, you know, pay half the tuition for a year for your kid as part of starting this organization that's going to really be like, you know, you go to college, you get a job, usually afterwards, after the experience of growth. Well, if you're not going to go to college as the vehicle to be able to make yourself employable, well, then maybe this is the way that you should think about investing in your child's future employment. So it was all private money that started the organization. And the dream was always that we would be sustainable. So sustainable meant that, you know, we would be able to cover our costs with the revenues from the businesses and not be dependent on donations to keep the organization going. But any nonprofit, excuse me, any organization in a startup phase goes to what's called a J-curve. You've got to spend money first before you can make money and make things sustainable. So we're at a place now where our organization, I think, could turn for a profit if we wanted to. But if we did that, we would we really see our donations that come into our organization every year as a way to enrich the jobs and the lives of our employees and to start new employment. So we started with, you know, one business, and as that business became profitable, you know, in quotes, profitable as a standalone profit center, spill over the profit from that into the next business with an annual fund. And as it grows and comes to a place with financial sustainability, spill whatever it makes over into the next business. So you run the organization to invest in a net zero funding type situation, but you're creating employment with every success that you have.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like businesses, a lot of times when they make money, they turn around and put it back into their company to improve or add new products. And so what you're saying is that that donation money is more like seed money to try other things and get other things started. It's not to dump it back into the cost that it keeps to keep going the other ventures. Is that correct?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. All of our businesses cover their costs. Many of our businesses help grow some of our younger businesses as they go through the scale point in the business development. And we're at a place now where we're thinking about starting another business here at the end of the summer, beginning of the fall, because of the success of the other businesses that we've got going right now.
Okay. So I had a couple of people who had written in with questions about that, and I think I've answered, or you've answered them. Now we have Vinny in Sunnyvale. Do you know of a similar kind of business in the Bay Area? That's San Francisco Bay Area. Did you ever approach CEOs of big companies to see if they would be part of something like this? So first of all, do you know of a similar kind of business in the San Francisco area?
In San Francisco, the only business that I know of right now is there's a group called the Specialist Guild. They are training individuals called the Specialist Guild.
Okay.
They're a group that just started, I believe, about a year and a half ago, and they're training individuals on software testing and then placing them in businesses in the Bay Area. They've been pretty successful, to my knowledge, when I last met with them, which was last fall, at placing two employees, because they just started. So two is a huge win to them. And they wanted to grow and scale what they were doing in the Bay Area. That's the only business I know of now, but I'm sure that there'll be a lot of growth going on in that area in the next few years as this gets becoming more and more mainstream. And there might be some that I don't know of. The second question was, have we approached any CEOs with this? You know, we haven't gone out and done the advocacy work and meeting face-to-face with somebody who is thinking about starting a business. What we have done is taken the concept of employing individuals with autism and other developmental disabilities in a small business model and taken that around the country and tried to express to people that, you know, you can create a business and be perfect for your sons or daughters or individuals. So instead of going to the top, we were thinking, you know, it needs to be grassroots in the community. And that's typically how the small businesses of America start. It's, you know, the guy next door finds some success over some time and finds himself on top of managing a business. There are certainly big corporations that are employing the population that are doing a really good job at it. And we need that. We've just been championing the small business model as a great employment opportunity to solve that crisis that we were talking about in the slideshow.
Right. So this morning in my keynote, I was talking about the importance of mentors when people are in school to help figure out what an interest that a student has and how that could apply to be a job or a way to make money. And so I like this whole idea of the grassroots, and if there are parts of a thing that you don't know, it's not, like you said, it's not necessarily having to go see the CEO of a big company, but you might know someone in your community who, like, for example, the whole candle making thing. Maybe you know somebody who makes candles, so they can come and help you out and give you a lot of information that you're not going to waste time or money on. So it's all about finding people in the community, and you'll be surprised, I think, when you ask for information, when it's something that people are passionate about themselves, they're more than happy to help, because, again, we're not asking for handouts. We're asking for information that's going to help us help people be more successful in what they're doing.
Yeah, I would agree completely. All of our businesses have had guidance from either a for-profit counterpart or somebody that is in the for-profit world that's a piece of a business that we're doing. So, you know, we have an event center in our organization, and, you know, we have a caterer, a decorator, someone from the Visitors Bureau, you know, all people that have been mentors to us in helping us guide the business to growth and helping us, you know, overcome obstacles that we've never seen before. But, you know, they are certainly very willing to help because, you know, through our success, they get success and their business grows as well.
Yes, so the Small Business Association, they have SCORE, which is the Service Corps of Retired Executives. And have you used them?
We haven't. We've just gone out and networked in the community based on, you know, the extended network of the parents that founded the organization, and then based on knocking doors. We tapped the local Chamber of Commerce. They've been very helpful.
It's a really
with
good
us.
Place. I would suggest people out there who are sending in questions about how do you get started or how do you get information. If, like, I'm not a business person either, and before I got my first book published, but I quit my job because I couldn't leave the house to go to a regular job to do my production work anymore. So I thought, okay, maybe I can write. How do I get business? How do I do writing as a business? I went to SCORE and found out, for free, all these kinds of things about setting up my own business. And they have some inexpensive webinars, but they also have some free information. But you can meet with people for free. And so then when Jeremy started in some different self-employment things and also people in the community here in San Diego, we put on a few self-employment workshops, and we tapped into SCORE. Again, they're retired executives, and for free they come and help you. And it's great because these are people who have a ton of experience, and they're sharing with you their knowledge. There's no use to reinvent the wheel if you can tap into people. So if you don't know anybody personally who can help you, check it out, because they're in all cities, SCORE, S-C-O-R-E. And if you're in a remote place, they do have webinars online as well. And also the Chamber of Commerce, just like Van mentioned, are really, I know here in San Diego, they've been very helpful too for people trying to earn a living. So let's see. Here's Sharon from Boise. She says, are there any grants out there that would help create and support a business for disabilities? If so, where would you recommend to begin?
Hmm. You know, the when I worked with the Autism Speaks Adult Services team at looking across the country at small business employer, it was amazing how people were able to braid and twist different types of revenue streams early on to be their seed money. And I know of some individuals that have used VR to start using to do self-employment and micro-businesses. I've seen people that has actually, it was another organization, they actually tapped TARP money, economic stimulus money, to start a business to employ individuals with disabilities. I've seen local colleges and community colleges extend seed grants to people that go through many incubator or entrepreneurship seminar type classes. And I've even seen some towns give money to take a group and employ the population in that town. So it's really about figuring out and researching the local area to see what opportunities are available, because all of these things change from state to state and community to community. But it's certainly out there, and I've seen people that have been successful doing it.
That's very good. And I know people are asking you about specific areas, and I know that you don't know everything, Van, but I'm just going to bring them up because perhaps you have heard from people or you have contacts in these areas. Joyce Davenport from Portland asks, have you heard of this being offered in the state of Oregon?
I'm pretty sure most of the vocational rehab programs have some form of micro-enterprise evaluation that could potentially give people money to start up. I'm not positive. I'm not sure. But I'm pretty sure that's something that they're all trying to roll out. But don't quote me. I actually don't know. I don't know enough of every state.
What about your type of organization? Do you know of people starting any in Portland, Oregon, or in any other areas of Oregon?
In Oregon?
About Sherman Oaks in Los Angeles. Sandy from Sherman Oaks wants to know if you've heard of an EV type of organization in L.A.
In L.A., I know that it's not exactly like us, but Inclusion Films does a really good job of training individuals on how to be a member of the film industry, and then they actually had one or two individuals go off and start their own micro media company. Inclusion Films would be a good place in LA. In Oregon, I'm not, I'm honestly not sure. I'm sorry to say. I wish I could answer. If they find of anything, I would love to know, just because I'd like to network with them.
Yeah, I've heard of different organizations such as Inclusion Films, and also later on today, this afternoon, we're having Artistry Studios, which is in the Bay Area, but that's specifically for creating, and it's based on art or creating things. And so, again, based on the interests of the student slash worker, because it started as an after-school program and went on to become now an employment thing, but... So I guess EV is the first one that I've heard of that actually is creating separate little or small businesses. But the fact, if you connect with other ones, like, for example, in LA, Inclusion Films, they might be able to hook you up with other parents who have the same thoughts or want to create something else. I mean, people with the same ideas tend to migrate together. So
yeah.
It might be an idea to do that. For example, with Jeremy and his interest in arts, just because of networking in the autism community, but also in the special needs community and also in the local art community, I've sort of found a couple of people who are professionals who are saying, I've always wanted to start like a work studio, where all kinds of arts can take place and they eventually can be into a vocation. So, there's a couple of different professionals, but all that has to do with creative arts are thinking, well, why don't we get a spot together? And then parents are saying, well, I have a kid with an interest. So it's a little different than what EV is doing, but the point is having these different types of options is really wonderful. What I like about the EV is that It does. There are so many different types of businesses you can put in there.
Yes, certainly is. And you know, Chantel, I don't have a slide on this, but I would think it would probably be great to talk a little bit about some of the challenges that we met along the way while we were trying to grow each of our businesses that don't have to do with.
Can you take some of the time to do that
money.
Now? I'm sure the listeners would love to hear that.
Yeah. So the big one that we found that was a huge hurdle for us is sales. Sales is the lifeblood of a business, and often in our experiences, we wanted to sit it down and figure out how to do everything, how to structure it for the population. And then we had, you know, really good-looking structures, but no customers to fill whose orders could then fill those structures. So when we pivoted, we actually did start to go out and sell products before we actually had them. We had an idea of how we would meet the each sale. We had an idea behind how we were going to grow the business and structure going forward, but we really focused on bringing in the customers first and growing the business and the value and the structures after them. There's some seasonality that goes into all business, and that's something that you have to think about too when you're going to try to employ a population that likes to have consistency, very standard schedule and those types of things is that, for instance, our larger business is really tied to the university here in town. So when the students leave in the summer, a lot of our employment drops. Whereas our candles business, the candle business really takes off in the fourth quarter during, the holiday season, October through December. But the rest part of the year is significantly slower than that. And that was something that you're going to have to think about when you're trying to fill consistent employment. And another piece of the seasonality is, especially if you don't have a lot of money to start off, is generating cash flow. Not every business, like our gift business, for instance, makes most of its money during October, November, and December. So we get a lot of cash then that we have to then budget and preserve for the rest of the year going forward. So if I was to start a gift business, I would, start networking and trying to make sales, very end of the summer, early fall, and then have to build the business as the orders came in, and then as use that cash to then preserve the business for the next year. Another thing that was a challenge for us was structures for our employees. If you were to come to EV, you would see some pretty obvious symptoms, and you would find some pretty not obvious symptoms of disabilities or disorders. But when you're trying to structure a business, you can't have a different type of structure and support system for each individual, which is, that's the mantra, right? If you met one person with autism, you met one person with autism.
Right.
And we were trying to, when you have to create a structure that's going to work for most everyone, the method that worked for us and took a long time to get there is we did the most communicative structure possible that would work for anyone. And then we would then take that structure and modify it based on each individual. So instead of having, we have 17 employees in our laundry business. Instead of having 17 different structures for each person, having one common denominator for all of them, and then letting each individual have their own modifications around that structure. That was something that took us a very long time to figure out and to make successful for our employees. Those are some of the biggest challenges that we've had. Sales is a big one. Once we figured out how to sell, things became a little bit easier.
Yeah, and sales is and marketing are big issues for any kind of business. And I think that nowadays with a lot of, there's a lot more consultants in small businesses. That's a big area I think that a lot of people struggle with. And so it's really important to remember that part of the business plan, the marketing is a topic that people spend little time paying attention to, but actually has to have a budget and should be in the business plan.
I completely agree. And I, you know, speaking of the business plan, you know, we started each of our businesses at EV. We didn't create, you know, 20, 30, 40 page business plan with, you know, huge Excel spreadsheets or anything like that. We really looked at each business and said, okay, is there an addressable market? Would there be the ability to grow this market? Okay, what kind of position in the market do we need to be in? Okay, now let's get started. Because often in the business world, you can experience the paralysis of analysis, which prevents you from starting, which is why I said learning lesson number one for us was just get started. You know, you're not – oftentimes people spend, you know, months or years figuring out a business plan before they jump into it. But
right.
You know, most of the time when you visit your first customer, you take that product and you go to your first customer, they're going to tell you why they don't like it. And often it's going to change all of that research you did. And then you can't go back and then research more. You've got to iterate on that product and take it to the next customer and keep iterating on the product until it's going to be purchased multiple times by your target customer. And that's how you grow based on experimentation and trial and error. Don't grow based on research and assumptions.
Right.
Startups are always an organization trying to test assumptions to become sustainable and profitable. So you're really trying to figure out with a product, with sales, that a business is going to be sustainable.
Good point. Here's a question from Carol Shelley ID. I work in a sheltered workshop. I guess it's from Shelley, Indiana, or is that Idaho? I'm not sure. But anyways, Carol. And she says she works in a sheltered workshop, and the state is trying to eliminate them. And what can we do or should we do to continue to help people with disabilities?
You know, that's an interesting question. I think employment that pays individuals and values the time and their creation is very essential. You know, that was something that was big for us, is that we all wanted minimum wage to be bare minimum for someone that worked here, and that they would be able to make more as they grew and became more productive and responsible and valuable to our organization. And I think right now it's really going to take, you know, the concept of what grew America, the entrepreneurism that grew America, to solve the issue of unemployment. You know, small businesses, I think it was Obama when he ran, said it made up 2/3 of the employment in this country. So if we're going to try to really make a big dent in that 500,000 that's coming and the many that are already there that don't have jobs, it's really going to come to little people compared to big organizations, little people starting something for their friends and family, which is why we champion the small business model. I think getting creative and innovating in our local communities is how we're going to combat, you know, the phasing out of old employment models for this type of community, and transition people that have been able to experience the added benefit of those, transition them into, you know, the normal community or into another type of employment setting. I really do think it's going to come down to people saying, you know what, enough's enough. I'm going to do it myself. And bring in the community with them.
Right. So Beth in New Jersey has a question. She wants to know, because we were talking about how it was a community grassroots thing of parents getting together, you know, and then working with you all. Are parents still involved in EV, and to what extent?
Yeah, so parents are involved at every level of our organization. We have parents of our population on our board. we have parents that are in the organization daily, either supporting their loved ones or just coming in and giving us new business ideas. We actually have parents out in the community helping champion the value of the individuals that we employ and the value of our businesses. Parents are out there still pushing the ground too, trying to encourage others to try to think about starting businesses to employ their loved ones. So really, the parents that started us have taken on many different roles, the roles that they feel comfortable with, but still are championing our mission in the community. And it's really been something special about this organization is that it just was a group of parents that started it.
Okay. John, who's in Kansas, wants to know if you have other small businesses in the pipeline, and if so, what those are.
Sure. So we've been looking at potentially doing a cleaning service for higher service office buildings. So, you know, there's usually a crew that comes in and details and touches up the workspace after it closes after 5. They're not coming in and doing deep cleaning or scrubbing or anything like that, but they're just keeping the place looking at to the same standards. So it's maintenance every day. We felt like that would be a pretty deep, interesting employer. We've looked into doing a food truck that our employees would be a part of the food delivery process and the food creation process, because we feel like we have enough operational know-how behind us now to address some of the regulations around food. We've also looked into growing our office solutions business into being more than just a direct mail service, growing it into being an advertising service, where we would, as part of our product, ship out advertisements for local businesses to the community. We've actually, because land is abundant down here, we've actually talked about thinking around how would a driving range for golf be a decent employer for this population. So we have a few ideas. Some are certainly just dreams, but we really do think we're going to be, especially the maintenance, the facility maintenance, the facility cleaning business, we've been kicking that around for 2 or 3 years, and we think we're probably going to start it soon.
Can I ask you how many staff members, I mean, administration type people, like, for example, yourself, is employed by EV?
So there's a team of 5 of us. And that's just grown to 5 this past year. It's been 4 young entrepreneurs managing the organization since 2010, where we did that pivot. You know, the interesting thing about having individuals that are younger is that you know, what they give up in experience, they you get a lot more energy, and really that's a huge competitive advantage when you're starting a small business. I also think what's interesting about our team of young entrepreneurs is that none of us have any direct autism experience until we came to EV. So certainly we had classes and we were in school with individuals that had autism and developmental disabilities, but we didn't have any supportive employment background or therapy background or anything like that. We came from business schools and business community, and we just really wanted to have an impact on this population. And what's really unique about that, which we didn't think of at the time, though, is that we had a competitive ignorance in that we didn't know what was the typical employment route for the population. So we weren't burdened by, oh, you can't do that. That's not how that works. This is how that should work. This is what it should look like. This is how it's looked like for many years. Which I think helped us think very creatively early on and still today when we started our businesses.
So may I ask you, how did you get involved and how did you hear about this organization or what attracted you to it?
Yeah, so I was approached by our board to come on and help grow the organization at a time where we had two businesses going. We had about 10 employees, and by two, we had one that was sustainable, one that had just started, and only had 10 or 12 employees. And the board pitched it to me as, you know, I studied entrepreneurship in school. You know, you want to be an entrepreneur? Here's a situation where you could be an entrepreneur. You're not going to have to go into debt or have a whole lot of financial burden on creating the businesses. But you will have to employ our population in a way that is best for them. And to me, it was just the perfect opportunity to learn entrepreneurship, start businesses, and have a huge impact in the community while doing it. I was the type of person that I have to personally buy into the value of something before I put my sweat and equity into it. And I remember sitting here at EV the first week, one of our employees came in, and he at the time was just shredding for us, and he gave this really joyful noise because he knew he was going to do something valuable and be around us for, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours that day. And it was very early on in our history, and we do a lot more than that now. But I remember thinking to myself, I can do this. And that to me was something that was extremely attractive, really the chance to learn business and grow a community need was so attractive.
Okay, I see your website is up on there. Is that how people could get in touch with you if they wanted someone to come out, I don't know, to speak at a conference or be in their area to talk about how to create the same kind of thing?
It certainly is. Our website, on the website, or on the screen there, www.evnc.org or www.extraordinaryventures.org. There it has all of our contact information, how to access all of our different businesses' websites. And you know, we'd certainly like to tell and share our story because we really hope that other people will mimic what we're doing in their community.
I just want to remind people that you can still, if you have see that little box near the slides, you can write in questions. We're still taking questions here. I don't know if this is a question that you can address, but one of the concerns is that people have is the whole, and we are having someone speak about SSI and work incentives tomorrow. That's going to be another webinar on this conference. But how does it work with, I mean, has it been a problem with SSI for the people working, or what are the challenges? Has it been difficult for your company in working with SSI?
So we really approach this situation as we're an employer. So we don't handle the funding streams for the employees on the back end, but because we obviously want it to make it a good solution for their employment, we really try to work with them and get them employed to the level that they want to be. So we schedule our shifts for each employee based on what would be right and ideal for them. So, you know, some of our employees will work 4 hours a week. Some of our employees will work, you know, five or six times that in a week. It really just depends on what's right for them, their family, and their situation. So, you know, it's certainly something that has caused families to decide that they don't want more hours of employment. And what that does for our organization is then lets us go and hire another individual or give more hours to someone else. So we have this, this sort of natural employment limit that then forces us to go in and hire someone else and give them more hours, which is why we try to grow our organization pretty sustainably throughout each year.
Yeah. That's a good points that you're making there. I also wanted to ask, do you treat So, for example, if somebody wants to apply for a job or thinks that they would be a good fit with your organization, do they go through a whole application interview process just like employment? In other words, are they mentored through that? Are they given experience of doing that? And do they have regular employee reviews as they would on a regular job? You know, in other words, are they getting that full employment experience as they would if they were working at a place that perhaps isn't so disability friendly?
Right. So everyone that applies gets interviewed. So we have, you can apply on our website to be an employee at EV. And so when you come in for an interview, everyone sits down and has a behavioral interview. So that's a normal question and answer feedback. And so they get that experience, which is why we interview everyone. And then we think that gives us a lot of information about that person's personality. But the real benefit for them is to see the businesses in operation, to see when they might be interested in working. So we then take our employees on a walking interview throughout our facility and wherever our other businesses are operating. And we let them see a business being worked so they can see the expectations that are going to be there for them. We ask them to then try those jobs out so that we can see what skills they have and they can, you know, really actually get a feel for what they'll be doing. And then based on that, you know, say it's a good fit, we think that person's going to be really valuable for us. And they're going to get a lot out of the work experience. And then we enter into a trial period with them, because sometimes some people don't actually, they might say they like it or show the ability to do it, but after a few weeks, it turns out to not be a good situation. So we want there to be a time limit that both parties could walk away if they wanted to. And then on the job, our feedback loop is not quite like a normal work environment where, you know, you have to sit down and you have a review of, you know, your month or year or quarter. We really try to do that daily because for so many of our employees, you know, if we told them that, you know, 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, they were being really slow, that wouldn't have quite an impact as it would if you said, you know, today you did a really good job at completing your task, but you're going to need to be able to, you know, do that faster because we need to, you know, have a certain amount of output. We try to work with that person, you know, daily on achieving those goals. And often the any type of case manager, support, or parent comes to us and say, these are the goals that this person's working on. Would it be okay if, you know, we really pushed that here with your organization? As long as it really lines up with, it doesn't detract from the business and other individuals' employment, then we usually are always very supportive of helping give them feedback and the ability to achieve their work-related goals.
That's great. So can I ask you, I'm going to ask you to share two stories if you don't mind. One is the most challenging or most frustrating situation that you've had with your with the whole concept of EV. And then secondly, the best story, you know, like the thing that makes you feel the happiest about some example of one person in particular that is an employee of EV.
Certainly. So I would say the most frustrating thing that we've had to experience has been something that each business has gone through, and that is when we first went to sell our product, people would line up to buy it, but because we were a nonprofit and because our employees were a certain population, they expected it to be really cheap. And that was something that irked me. It absolutely irked me. But what was really good about that, you know, that big frustration and the long time it took to get us to a place where people didn't have that expectation in our community is that, one, we, you know, our businesses were able to show that we had pricing power, which is really important when you're trying to create products that people see as valuable. But also, you know, when you climbed out of that perception, you know, that meant that the community around us was slowly changing their perception of what the value somebody that has a developmental disability or autism can give and what they're worth. And that, to me, has been worth every bit of the fight and frustration that that came with that problem. The best story happened, you know, there's so many of these. I think one of the best stories happened really recently. So the way that we pay all of our employees is via direct deposit. And, you know, we've been struggling with communicating the value of that to our employees by saying, like, no, you've been paid, it's there, you go access it. So we with one employee in particular, we tried this as an experiment. We printed off the pay stub, and on a sheet of paper, you know, it said their name, how much they got paid and deposited, and we told him, this individual's name is Alex. He goes, Alex, this is your paycheck. This is the money that you got, that you earned. And his eyes sort of widened. And then he turned around. He didn't say anything. He turned around and he walked downstairs to another level of our building. And there was a group of employees working there. And he raised that sheet of paper above his head and he goes, I got paid. And everyone in the room that was there started clapping for him and cheering for him. And that was a really cool experience for us, and just to see how excited he was that he was paid for what he did. Gosh, it made it all worth it, and that everyone else around him knew that they were in that same situation, and they were all really happy about it. It was just very rewarding.
Yes, I can imagine that. You know, that whole look says it all. When you have someone who's realizing that he's earning something, he's earning what he's worth. It's not you know, exactly the fact that just because you're a nonprofit doesn't mean that you aren't supposed to be run like a business.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that was interesting. Also, your challenge area, because that's the problem, is that when people think, oh, not-for-profit, it means that they don't have to make money. Not-for-profits still have to be run like a business and make money. It's just that the money goes back into the community. It doesn't go back to into the pockets of the people working in the place. But I can imagine that those seeing somebody like that with that look on his face with his paycheck is more than worth any frustration that you have.
It certainly is. It makes every struggle of, you know, being an entrepreneur and starting a business worth it. Know that impact is there, and that it's going to happen. It needs to scale and happen everywhere. It gives me a lot of energy.
So I imagine that besides getting paid, have you seen other wonderful aspects? I know you mentioned some of them in your slides, coming through for these individuals, such as a rise in self-esteem. And you said a lot of times their inadaptive behaviors went down. And did they learn to communicate together as a team when they needed to on a job and things like that?
Yeah, so we have we hear stories all the time of employees who, this is the first paid job they've had. They really enjoy being part of the team. And the way that plays out and that they know that that's happening is a sense of purpose and drive showing up at home. So one of our employees who's pretty impacted has been able to be really self-sufficient in two-step processes now at home. He's, you know, he used to be able to tell time, had regressed, and is now wanting to learn how to tell time again because he wants to know when he's going to get to go to work. Been able to lay his clothes out the night before because he knew he was going to go to work the next day. All things that have sort of poured over into other aspects of his life, mainly because he had a habit, a keystone habit, that he really enjoyed, that was coming to work and being a part of the team. And another area that we've been trying to push through is that we started a pilot program to be researched where we did music therapy with our employees. And we're looking to see if it's going to have an effect and spill over into communication on the job site. I don't think any research has ever been done like that. We're hoping that we'll be able to show an increase in employee communication through having music therapy done in the work environment and with coworkers.
Great. That's so wonderful to hear those stories. Because, I mean, a lot of times, too, people wonder if their child or their young adult had a job. And they worry about the whole SSI and losing money. And the point is that if you have a job, money is a part of it. But the other part of it are all the things you just mentioned now, that people, you know, it's quality of life. And these are ways that people who have jobs improve upon, even if, let's say, their financial situation may be not that much different or still is not 100%, you know, because of the SSI and all these things that we'll be talking about tomorrow. But sitting at home and getting an SSI check, you're not getting that self-esteem. You're not getting all those things that you just talked about.
Yeah. When we communicate it to the population that doesn't understand the disability world or doesn't get a daily reminder of it, we say, like, look, the meaning behind a job at EV is like when you introduce yourself to somebody, you say, hi, my name's Van, and I manage a social enterprise. You know, our employees are now able to say their name and say what they do in the community. You know, if that's how we define our sense of purpose, you know, our employees are going to get the exact same sense of purpose and drive and identity through having a place of employment.
Right. So we have no more questions coming in. And so do you have anything else that you want to share with everyone before we sign off besides your website? You want to repeat your website for everyone in case they're not looking at the slides?
Yeah, sure. So our website, if you want to get in touch with us or learn more about the program, it's the short URL code is www.ev, as in Extraordinary Ventures, evnc, as in North Carolina, .org. And there you can learn about the organization, how it was founded, much of what we've talked about today. And then if you need to get in contact with us because you're kicking around an idea or you have some more questions, feel free to give us a call there. And I guess my last piece is that replicability piece. That, you know, you don't have to do exactly what we did, but you certainly can create an employment environment that's very successful, meaningful, and pays your community, your kids, where you're located. It certainly can be done. Many people do it for themselves, and I think it's going to be a big way to change and move the needle on employment of the disability population.
That's great. Someone else just wrote in, Julia from Andover, saying thank you so much. Truly inspirational.
Well, thank you. I'm glad we could share our story. Feel free to get in touch with me, anyone, if you have any type of an employment type situation that I don't know about. I would love to learn. I always think that so much can happen through learning from one another when it comes to people with disabilities. So.
Yeah, in fact, I have to say that I met Van Hatchell just a few weeks ago at a national conference in Los Angeles called FRED, which is parents and professionals getting together who are interested in creating lives, you know, future lives based on the individual's wants and needs. And so Van and I were sitting at the same table, so it was just fortuitous because, you know, I'm working on Jeremy's self-employment, if you will. And I thought, oh, my gosh, I'm going to have to get Van on here to speak to everybody. So thank you so much, Van, for taking the time. Again, it's Van Hatchell from, what's the name of your company again?
Extraordinary Ventures.
Okay, Extraordinary Adventures. Is that it?
Extraordinary Ventures. Like each venture that
we
start is extraordinary.
I had the name of your presentation here, but not your company. Okay, so Van from Extraordinary Ventures. Thank you so much for being here, and thanks for all that you do.
Thank you so much for having me. I really hope it can move the needle forward. It's been really great talking with you today.
It was great. Thank you. You really gave people a lot of hope and information. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Goodbye now.
Bye.